Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday, June the 14th. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
So what have you been up to this week, Kev? What's been going on?
Just been in Hawaii, been in again, and been in the sea a bit. But I think you've been having a bit more of an adventure than I have. Running around different racetracks in Europe.
And yeah.
Where are you now?
Currently on the outskirts of Le Mans. I do the annual pilgrimage. You remember recording it this time last year, actually. But I'm in a little village called Le Chartres-sur-la-Loire, which is in the River Loire, a beautiful part of the world. And we've also, as you said, last week we went down to Paul Ricard, which is near Marseille. And then we did a bit of track time on the famous Paul Ricard circuit. And then we drove some of the Tour de France, you know, the cols, as they call them, the mountain passes. So we did Col de Bonnet, Col de Galibier, Col de Madeleine. Amazing views. You probably saw some of the videos. Probably the best roads I've ever driven on, the famous Route Napoleon, where Napoleon marched over 1,000 kilometers towards Paris back in the day. But yeah, it's amazing. Really, really good people, really good roads. And the weather's been absolutely fantastic, which apparently the UK has had some horrific weather over the last 10 days. So, but I think it's good timing because as I head back to the UK, the weather is going to improve.
Yeah, it looks good. So what's been the highlight of the Ricarda track or whatever it was called and Le Mans so far?
Highlights. I mean, just people meeting. I think petrolheads are like-minded, enthusiastic people. One of the guys we're with has got a Ferrari 296, and he managed 178 miles an hour up the famous Mistral Strait, which is about, I think it's like 1.2 kilometers, about 1.2 kilometers straight on the. It's a very fast technical circuit, is Ricard. But yeah, incredible experience, met some great people and it's just a great experience. And I know Jonathan, our friend Jonathan's been down in Provence as well. I was about 40 minutes away from him. So I saw some of his amazing videos that he put online, which again, living the dream, mate.
Yeah, very good. Sounds good.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the news stories. I mean, Belfast has been gripped by several nights of serious disorder following the brutal knife attack on local resident Stephen Ogilvy on the 8th of June, allegedly carried out by a Sudanese asylum seeker. What began as protests quickly escalated into anti-immigration riots, with mass groups setting fire to homes, vehicles and businesses, attacking police with petrol bombs and masonry, and targeting areas with large migrant populations. More than a dozen police officers have been injured. Extra officers have been drafted in from elsewhere in the UK, and political leaders across Northern Ireland have condemned the violence. So did you see this, Kev? It all looks very, very grim out there at the moment.
Yeah, I was speaking to one of my friends, actually, from Northern Ireland, who owns a couple of cafes and stuff. It's nowhere near as bad as, we're getting to see, I think. But, I mean, it is, I don't know, the sight of somebody trying to attack somebody, chop their head off, maybe slight exaggeration, but certainly the guy lost his eye, didn't he? He was blinded in one eye. Just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. There's bad stuff going on all over the world. My good friend has been arrested in Lebanon on trumped up charges, basically, because he's a Christian guy and they're not liking that out there. So my prayers go out to him today as well. You know, the world is a bit of a mess, you know. These guys have been associating with him for over 10 years now. And, he's a family and kid and stuff. So, yeah, they just tricked him in jail for no apparent reason. Trumped up charges. So, yeah, I mean, whether we look to the Middle East, whether we look what's happening back home, there's unrest, isn't there? People are unhappy about the whole situation.
Absolutely. Okay. So we've got a few interviews on this week. Let's welcome our first guest this week. We welcome back to the podcast, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin.
Nice to be back. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely. Yeah, we saw the news that Bezant Resources has secured a $7 million prepayment financing facility and life of mine copper concentrate offtake agreement with Hartree Metals to support the development of the Hope and Gorup copper project in Namibia. The funding will be used to complete mine construction and commission the NLZM processing plant ahead of first concentrate production targeted for Q3 2026. Hartree will purchase 100% of the copper concentrates produced from the operation under market-based terms. The four-year facility includes a 12-month repayment grace period and a conversion option at 0.16 pence per share, representing a 28% premium to the latest closing price. Management confirmed the project remains on schedule and on budget, while the agreement also establishes a long-term strategic relationship with Global Commodities Group Hartree Partners. So, Colin, just add a bit more colour to the whole deal here, please.
Well, this is the financing that everybody's been waiting for. We announced the intent, if you like, in October last year. You need an offtake partner. Of course, with copper prices as they are now, getting an offtake partner would not have been difficult. But we decided to sign up with Hartree, not because of the offtake, but although the offtake terms we've got are very satisfactory. But we do need, as I said, as we said in our statements there, that the long-term strategic relationship is very important to us, because our ambitions are not just for phase one of this project. The ambitions are to make it a much larger project. The ore body is receptive to that. We've got 17 kilometres to be confirmed, I wouldn't even say explored, you know, the confirmation. And beyond there, many kilometres of exploration. So we probably will get phase one going by the time we said, but no sooner is that going than we're back into exploration, definition, modelling, permitting, new plant location, and moving into phase two, which we sincerely hope is difficult at this stage to be definitive. But we're looking at 500,000 tons of contained copper. So 25 times 20 is 500. So a very long-term life mine at 25,000 tons a year, which is a meaningful proposition for any company. So the strategic association is as important as the offtake agreement. The offtake agreement, you know, we could have got and would have got in the marketplace. But the total package in terms of strategic relationship, somebody sharing our long-term plans for the project area. That's the reason we got together with Hartree back in October. And of course, the rest of the time has been frustrating for everybody. We understand why in the company. Companies have to do the due diligence. Companies have to be sure that they're spending the money at the right time. Companies have to be sure that the project is advancing in the right way. And so Hartree did what they did do. They did as they were. They signed up to in October. They did their due diligence. They did all the work necessary. They did all the documentation. Obviously, we were part of all the exercise, many visitations to the mine, outside consultants, outside lawyers, internal lawyers. And at the end of the day, we announced, we got to the agreement that we announced yesterday. So very pleased about that. There's never a final peg in the hole, but a significant one. And I have to say, the most important part of that announcement was that we didn't lose the beat during the process. I think there was some sort of perception that we was sat there waiting for the finance. But, you know, we all know that finances need skin in the game. So we had to demonstrate that we too was financing. And that's why we paid the $2.5 million over to Castle Lake for the plant. That's why we paid all the deposits for the key items of equipment. That's why we did started and are in the middle, well, more than the middle, towards the end of upgrading the NLZM plant. So we're showing our commitment by action, by work, and by investment in the ground and on the project. So it's timeous. It was basically more or less to the timing we expected. And as I say, what's the most important aspect of all this, We haven't skipped a beat. We've just kept going flat out. And the intensity, you won't believe the intensity of action now, on the basis that everything's, all the trains are arriving at the station together. And we sincerely think we can start breaking ground towards the end of July. So we might even beat the ore sorter. And if we do, at today's copper prices, when we start the box cutting the entry, assuming we get good ore, we will actually deliver by before we put gold through the ore sorter and get producing concentrate just as fast as we possibly can. So that really, it talks about the finance, and it also talks about Byzant's intentions short, medium and long term.
Yeah, absolutely, Colin. So you had a presentation yesterday in London talking about Namibia, which is obviously becoming central in terms of your companies, both Bazant, African Pioneer, which we'll come on to in a bit, which had news on Friday morning, and obviously Kendrick with the rare earths. So just give us a recap, all those people that weren't in the room, what was it like yesterday?
Well, it was very nice to be having a presentation in London. You know, since COVID, they're a thing of the past sort of thing. We did one 2 years ago, and we had a very good turnout. I didn't do an actual head count, but I think it was nearer 80 than it was 50. It was, you know, there were more people than tables, and we had a really sort of eclectic collection of people, and which is from all aspects of the industry, brokers, hedge fund managers, high net worths, retail investors, analysts, you name it. They, you know, we had a very, very broad cross section. And I think they enjoyed it. I certainly hope they did. I did. It was a thumbnail sketch of all our companies. But what we did as a theme, we did this round about exactly the same time 2 years ago. We made certain projections, and I guess we use that as our baseline, make comparisons where we were then and where we are now. And, you know, and I was happy to say that most of my forecast that I made 2 years ago proved to be correct. Copper at that stage was about 10,000, I think. Now it's 14, as we know. Gold went up as significantly as I forecast. Geopolitical tension, I talked about that 2 years, and of course made the point that 2 years ago it wasn't pretty, and that now it's very ugly, and that I really just did not expect the weakening of global tension, if you like, to the extent that we've got now. And I referred back to the opening slide that 2 years ago, more or less tongue in cheek, I said that my opening slide, where we fought wars over oil, we'll fight wars over copper and critical metals. You know, and I said, well, 2 years on, tongue in cheek, and in actual fact, it's beginning to look that way. And I think the audience took that on to into the debate afterwards, and we enduring it. There was much discussion about the underinvestment in our industry, and that we're paying for it now. There was also a discussion on the majors still more or less dividend driven, not spending money on exploration, and very few acquisitions. We made the comment, and then during the discussion, that a comment was made that not many main companies have actually done what we've done, and that's go from a raw project into production. There's been a number of raw projects into sale. Not many of those, Kevin. Not many of those, Phil. But how many AIM companies or LSE Standard have actually got a project from grassroots and brought it through right the way into production under their own terms? And of course, we mentioned the fact that with a few plant adjustments and what have you, we expect Bazant to get up to probably nearer 10,000, 5,000, 8.5, 9. So we informed the audience that we were ambitious for what throughput we might achieve. We couldn't obviously go into the African Pioneer deal to any great extent because it hadn't yet been announced. So we took the audience through the fundamentals of African Pioneer. And I guess the key fundamental is the fact that it's very close to Windhoek. You might say that's not much of a fundamental, but it is when you've got the access to labour, to infrastructure, to everything. But of course, the key fundamental is the fact that it's got 300,000 tons of copper and is completely open-ended. Adjoining Ongombo is Ongiama. And Ongiama is superficially explored. We know it has high values of copper, but we also know that the gold values are somewhat higher than nearby Ongombo. So we're going to explore that to see where it fits in the equation. We do feel that we'll be able to add more open pitable ground, but it's going to be extra copper tons, it's going to be extra gold ounces, and of course we've got to integrate it into the composite story. And today's announcement says just that, that of course we're looking at Ongiama, there'll be a recce there, we'll see what contribution it might play. will rate out according to that anticipated contribution, and it will be in our overall design in probably 6 months' time. You'll see that we intend to fast-track on Gombo, so past protestations from our and statements from our team have been about a year, 18 months behind Open Gurup. That adds a lot of weight to that statement, because we're with a Chinese group who's got a very good record reputation. They are a plant builders. The group build plants, install plants, and there's quite a nice description of them in our RNS. So the statements they're making, we're making, gives us every hope, every chance of bringing Ngombo into production sooner than later. And the beauty of that, of course, is that African Pioneer still stands alone. That will be a special purpose vehicle. The asset won't be directly an African Pioneer, and we'll be working through a special purpose vehicle. We refer to it as a holding company. An African Pioneer is free to do as it wishes, when it wishes, as fast as it wishes. So on the one hand, we're building up a new PLC to the northern end of, near Windhoek, with the quite a few assets that we've got our eyes on there. And at the same time, we're consolidating on Gombo and on Nyama. So African Pioneer looks like it's going to have its day in the sun soon. So very pleased with what we've achieved there. And as I say, a lot of that wasn't said at the presentation because we couldn't, because we hadn't made the announcement. And then Ngombo speaks for itself. I mean, the excitement in the room, you could feel it. Everybody knows about Kendrick and the Bunya project. We showed pictures, photographs. We described the work which had been done in the past. We described the work that we'd done. We made the point that we're bringing in three machines. We made the point of what the prices are of the various metals and the distribution of the metals. We made brief reference to the fact that it's ideally placed for a refinery. And of course, we wouldn't be financing a refinery. We feel that that's beyond the capabilities of emerging juniors. But what a location, 55 kilometers from a deep water port. And obviously, there's interest in that as a concept. We don't want to leave it at concept stage. We're working very hard, making sure that message is distributed to those who need to know it. And already there are those in high positions who share our aspirations. But I think that's a country, that's a government-to-government matter and outside our pay grade. But the good thing about it is if were that to come to fruition, it can start off with feed some 60 kilometers away. And when you're contemplating building a very large refinery and you've got a base project, if you like, 60 kilometers away, which can produce between 50 and 70% of your daily feed, and the rest is a bonus, that's really a joyful and a very, very good position to be in. So nothing's changed there at Bunya. Fast track, putting everything we've got into it, three machines. The information will be thick and fast. News releases will be thick and fast. And those who think that, oh, well, you've had a big jump 35 times and the story's over, I think they left the meeting knowing in actual fact the story's just starting. It really is a fantastic project. And we never stop getting surprises. We keep digging old pieces of information up which were not used or not used properly and fitting them into the story. The work continues in America on petrology, mineralogy as a basis to our metallurgical construction, if you like, of the process plant, of how it will look, how you handle the various rare earths. We're pretty content at this stage about uranium and thorium has not been a nuisance. So every sort of aspect of a rare earth initial stages are going at a pace, generally faster than you would expect, and aided in no small way by the huge data bank that we've inherited as part of the transaction. So that was really the thrust of the meeting. We went through the other projects in our portfolio, and we're providing a brief update. And it lasted about an hour, obviously, discussions and informal discussions. People enjoying the lunch and chatting afterwards are always very, 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 very useful at that conference. So I think the social match well with the formal. with the semi-formal, and we had a very good day. And I think London needs those days. It's sad, you know. We used to host them, other companies used to host that. I think that's the first I've heard around for a while. As I say, we use as a reference point 2 years. What has changed in 2 years? And I made many forecasts 2 years ago, and I'm pleased to say it's nice to stand up against a background where the forecasts you made have actually come to being. I didn't make the forecast about the world problems, but I just said I couldn't see them getting better quickly 2 years ago. Certainly got that one right.
Well, Colin, I don't want to interrupt you. I was there a couple of years ago, if you remember, in that room, and many of the eyes were glazed over. And I imagine that yesterday, I couldn't make it, but yesterday there was a lot more attention than you might have been used to over the past few years. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Yeah, I think that people are realising that all the trains have arrived at the station at the same time. The underlying conditions of the market, the underlying conditions of the trade, and the underlying conditions of industry and global affairs, the recognition that West have completely lost out to the Chinese on a lot of commodities, investment, all of those things. I think the recognition is coming, and that, you know, all this talk now about ASX depriving the mining market of future investment. This is a temporary blip, and to me that's just drama. We've got a positive underlying case. Our industry has been short of investment for 50 years. The need is there. The exploration has been missing for 20, 25 years at least, and the majors just aren't in the exploration business. And we made the point, Charles, that in 5 years we've had 11 drill campaigns and 50,000 metres. You know, a lot of companies have just kept the lights on, and now, you know, they're sort of getting ready to do some of the programmes in 3 years ago, and we didn't really know what tomorrow would bring. Every penny we got had to be guarded. Every penny we got had to be used usefully, and we're now getting the benefit of it. And
well, ultimately, you're getting the financial deals, you're getting the mines built. But paint me a picture, Colin, by the end of... You know what? No, not the end of calendar 2026. Let's say 12 months from now that we're talking in... mid-July 2027, with the portfolios, with Pioneer on Gombo, with Bazant, Hope and Gorob, with Galileo, potentially Luan Sobe, with Kendrick and the Rare Earths portfolio there, where do you hope to be across the portfolio a year from now? Because it feels like you've planted the seeds and the fruit have all grown, and now all we really need to do is pluck them off the tree, which is probably quite simplistic, but it's what it feels like at the moment.
Yeah, it was down south simpler than it was 2 years ago. And we all know that mining's never, never, never simple. I mean, today you're happy, tomorrow you're miserable. But if I project that clock forward, we're at a better stage now than we've ever been. Open Gorup in production, mature production. I'm going at an annualized rate at about 9,500 tons of copper. I see Ongombo in decision to mine and equipment being manufactured, ready to bring over. To get the mine going. I see additions to African Pioneer's portfolio, which are extremely meaningful and will add a lot of value. So I see African Pioneer being a company which gets lots of attention. The rare earth company in a year's time, Kendrick, I see that basically maturing much faster than anything I've done in my career. And I see it having a maiden resource. I see it having a full study. And I've seen it being the centre of attention, one of them. I mean, you can't make absolute statements like that, but certainly in the top three rare earth projects in the world, not yet being developed, but being planned to be developed. And I expect to have secured, along with others, along with the bigger players in the industry, the refinery concept being taken forward at Luderitz. I see Galileo producing its partner, and McGuyan. I see Shinganda being a producer. I see Silver King pit the way down, and I see us completing a decline. That decline to take over from the open pit, and we're going into the high-grade material. Prior to that, we will have done an exercise where we're trying to find the bottom of this pipe, because you don't want to drive a decline down to 140 and find out, you finish it 180 or 200, that would be a very expensive decline.
Indeed.
So we know that it probably goes to 220, and we probably know in our minds that we won't bottom it. So in actual fact, we'll bottom it to a position of around about 400 meters. And why do I say 400 meters? Well, that's the sensible trucking distance for a decline. You know, if you look at one in seven, that's 2,800 meters of decline. You know, that's an awful long decline for small trucks. So I guess it will be bottomed for practical reasons. So for a year from now, we expect to see a pit which is mature, producing a mixture of oxides, sulfides, with nearby plants taking up the oxides, putting the sulfides through our own plant, and completing the development of the ground.
Well, I think the key thing for me is with copper at $14,000 and still rising, that's a very forgiving environment while you're building a mine as well. Every small mine I've ever seen built, there are issues. Maybe issues aren't the right word, but kinks to work out. If you're working at sort of $7,000-$8,000 copper, that can be very difficult. $40,000 copper, and if that, you know, if any kind of problems with recoveries with anything, you can still be making a lot of money, even if, you know, little issues start to crop up.
That's correct. I've always tried to do whatever I do in this business to be in the bottom quartile. As a junior, as an emerging company, you can't be at the top end of risk. You know, if copper's 14, you can't be producing at 12. BHP can, Rio, people like that can plan around projects like that. But, you know, the sort of, you know, when I'm pretty jaundiced with project. If you can't make money at 500, I'm a little bit scared of it. I'm still dozy enough to think that gold, you know, look at $1,500, certainly no more than $2,000.
I think
you've got to, as a small company, you can't start planning around the top. You've got to assume the worst. And if your project that you're envisaging getting involved in can withstand on your eye-level examinations, low copper prices, low gold prices, then they're well worth pursuing. But that brings in another point, Charles. You know, we've talked about the stable, the portfolio of projects we've got. Try getting those now. You want to have an open L. So this story didn't start 2 years ago. It started in 2016.
Well, I think the interesting thing with it, you know, with all the metals pricing, in every metals bull market, there's been big, big drawdowns, right? And particularly when you're starting off, the economics need to stack up. So if gold goes to $3,000, say, or copper goes back, just, you know, dips below 10 for a temporary period of time, are you still generating, you know, free cash flow? Which you will be. I mean, that brings me on to my next question about valuations, because let's assume it all goes according to plan. What's going to happen to the market capitalizations of these companies? And you know, this isn't forward-looking, it is speculative. But ultimately, if you're producing what you say you're going to produce, you know, once things are ramped up at Hope and Gorup, for example, where could Pazang go? You know, add on the blue sky exploration potential as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the point I made yesterday. And I actually got the combined valuations of the companies where they were 2 years ago, where they are now. And they stand now at around about 85 million. And I think there was around about 20 odd million and then. So, you know, we've gone up four times in terms of market cap. But, you know, I did say to the audience, and it was taken on board, we're all pretty impressed by that. But the reality, that doesn't mean they're fully valued. That means there's been some restoration of value corresponding to market conditions. The reality is that entire portfolio remains totally undervalued. So I wouldn't like the audience, anybody in the audience, just to leave thinking full value is out, not much scope. Every one of our companies has got the chance for, we keep using this word, 10-bagger, but, you know, certainly every one of our companies has got room for significant growth, typical venture capital type numbers. And we're not there, Charles. We're playing catch-up. And I can't look at one of the companies and say, well, that's fully valued. As you can see, African Pioneer now, £5.7 million is, you know, it's almost, well, we're talking about money, so it's never a joke. But £5.7 million does not even consider the valuation of that company with what it's got and the potential to have.
It was 2 million not so long ago. So
I know.
you could buy 1%, well, you could buy 1% of that company for 20 grand, and quite easily because people wanted to sell the shares. Now things have changed a little bit, but it's still when you think 1% of that company is worth what, 60 maybe.
Yeah, but if
That's
you go back about 4 or 5 months, you could have bought Kendrick for 750,000 quid, lock, stock and barrel.
indeed, indeed. But then we didn't have the rarer assets. And then when it did come, this is the problem with all of these things. You need to spot them early, but you also have to have the conviction to hold them. And with Kendrick, for example, how many people are going to take a position in something that's worth less than £1 million, and how many people are going to hold it, all the way up several thousand percent?
That's right.
Not the easiest thing in the world to do psychologically. But
I
anyway,
think, but if you look
go
at
on.
the typical valuation creation of a mining company at that stage where it's very little, then discovery takes it up to the exponential part. Then it flattens over where you turn discovery into resource. Then it gets a little bit flatter when you actually start doing the numbers. Can you actually make a mine of it? Then it flattens out altogether when you go out to seek the financing and the execution. And then when it goes into production, it steepens again. And around about that point, of course, you have a different type of investor. So the start of the curve I talked about is the real sort of the one who recognizes that venture capital is venture capital, and that he's going to spot. He's not in really investing in projects. He's investing in management and management, a management team that can pick out future projects, and they're the ones who have the major returns. Then you get the one post-discovery where, well, some of that, and their patience tends to be a bit longer. And then the ones when you're getting into and you're getting post-evaluation and talking about financing and building, that's where you need really serious investors who are there for the long term. But those, as you say, who start at the bottom and it's pre-discovery, they're the ones who get the massive uplifts. And Kendrick was a classic example of just what can be done if you invest in a company which is, well, at its bottom or not. I mean, you just continue at 750,000. You're either a shell for somebody else's use, or you get on with life and find the right project. We did the latter. So it's
I
a
think
different type of investors as a project as projects go through the go through their own curves, which basically and you end up with valuation which match progress, but not often in straight lines. The discovery is where you go exponential, which is Bonnier.
indeed, indeed. Well, that's where the true blue sky is. I'd also like to just ask you a quick question on two other projects that are maybe we haven't had an update on them in a while. There's
Sure.
Ranger that Extract owns, and then also Luan Sobe, which is a property of Galileo. I think those two, kind of a little bit unloved in the way investors perceive them, but they could also get their time in the sun not too long from now. Would you agree?
Yeah, understandably so. Bushranger will have its time in the sun. It's the next generation porphyry. It's located, it's got a wonderful address, 50 miles from Sydney. It's in the Lachlan Fold. Averages about 0.24, 0.25, and it's just on the edge. And ore sorting, like a lot of situations around the world, ore sorting will in actual restore the value, making one or two projects, which we're doing all we can at the moment with various parties to monetize that project. There is interest whether we put it in with another listing. I don't think you could put a listing around it, but there is interest in them from the places you would expect. We're pursuing that interest. Sobe. Luan Sobe, we've been on the ground, we've pegged it out, we've got the equipment there, we're ready to mine. There's a lot of interest in it. It's in a sensitive position on the copper belt there. And many competing issues around Luan Sobe, which makes it difficult to actually finalize what the route is going to be and take shape. So, not too much I can say about Luan Sobe other than we're working all of the. All of the elements which is going to make its previous work more than worthwhile for our shareholders, place will be where it needs to be rightfully. on the Mufulira region map. So they're two big projects. Obviously, Lewinsova is nowhere near as big as Bushranger. And we've got to do something with Bushranger, and we've got to do it with the right people. It's a similar situation that we made to Mankind. We made that decision. We bit the bullet there, and we vended it into a company. And I wouldn't be surprised if we'd take a similar route with Bushman. And Lewinsova, I've described all of what we're doing there. There's many, 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 many aspects to that story. And I know shareholders are frustrated. So am I. But certain issues you can't force. You just have to go along with the tide and use things to your advantage and manage things which to your advantage. And that's where we are with the Lewinsova.
So, Colin, my question is, we're a race to at least 100 million market cap. Is it going to be Bazant or is it going to be Kendrick first?
He asked me, Kevin, you bugger. You always ask these questions and put me on the spot. Fortunately, I've got a pretty easy answer to that one. They're different. I mean, one is exploration, is new discovery, exciting and immediate X value. And the other is a formal production business. So you have to say that Kendrick, the value is forced to be recognized locally and globally. And so therefore it has to be the forerunner of everything we're doing. Bazant, nobody's going to believe and take us to 100 until we actually announce that first concentrate. And you can see, the financing was much awaited. When it arrived, it was well received, but the market didn't go overboard, nor did we expect them to, nor did we want them to. But steady production brings confidence. Confidence brings money and investment into the company. So I'm expecting that to get to where you're talking about, and I won't put a figure on it, for regulatory reasons. But who's going to have the biggest acceleration? Who's going to have the quickest return on investment and which company is going to have the best recognition in our portfolio? It has to be Kendrick, because as I think I said in one of your podcasts, which somebody repeated yesterday at the presentation, you walk around Bonya and you've got rare earths all over your feet. It's like playing tennis on a clay court, you have to clean the rare earths off afterwards. Like you clean yourself up off a clay court at tennis. So really it is quite an extraordinary deposit. To visit it has to put it in perspective. One visit and you really know what you're looking at. And because you're on a lunar landscape, flat desert, those pictures that we put on the various sites, seem quite minor. A couple of them are over 150 meters high. But because it's a very flat landscape, you don't really get to appreciate it on a photograph. Now you think about a quarry face 150 meters high. Even if it was limestone, it'd be worth an absolute packet. When you're looking at what we're looking in the rare earth spectrum and the specific rare elements, just the other rare earths, I mean, gee whiz, one on its own, but there's nine. So from that aspect, Kendrick's going to speak for itself, speak fast. We're generating information much faster than, Charles, going back to your question, we're on a build, Bazant. C follows B, D follows C. And it's a formal, slow process with the aim in sight being middle of August. Kendrick, on the other hand, every day brings a new adventure. But we are seeing, despite the excitement and the odd very high results, we're not seeing very many low results, hardly any. And we're seeing consistency. So whilst we're producing stacks and stacks of results, and they're consistent, and they're leading to something quite. So to summarize, Bazant is going to take us there, where we want to be. It's going to be a very long project. It's going to be added to. And immediately we get surplus cash flow, the machines will start turning to prove that 500,000 minimum that we're expecting. And at Bonya, of course, we all know what we've got to get there. We've got a fast-track, eye-level design. So we've got a feasibility study in place. First of all, it's a maiden resource, and we'll get that by late August, and we'll turn that into an eye level feasibility study, and we'll work very hard on the refinery. So it's good news all the time, a lot of news which the market likes, and in a space which is much sought after for quality projects, and there aren't many, just an handful. So that's answered your question.
Yeah. You have talked about Kendrick almost becoming a district play rather than just here we are, we have an asset and it's got rare earths. But the thing that I'm going to come back to in terms of Bazant, what people have to understand, if you're talking about coming out of the ground between 8 and 9,500 per annum of contained copper in terms of concentrate, you are talking about revenues of 7 to 12 million, and that's just the copper. That's not gold or silver credits, if you've got it. So, I mean, company alone has got money with that type of revenue that's coming in.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, basically, we're talking about EBITDA at around about 40 million. So even if you multiply dollars, if you talk about that on multiples of 3, 4 to 1, you're talking of $160 million. But the, you know, that order, shall we say, $120 to $160 million with the present plans, once they're completed and running, and we're producing annualized copper at a rate of about 9 to 10,000 tons a year. Turn that to 25,000, Kevin. Turn that to 25,000 tons, and you're in the big league. I mean, what's the revenue? 25,000 times 14, it'd be 250, about 300, it must be about 330 million. Well, 330 million, take a 40% margin into 120, you know, something like about 120, 130.
130, 132.
Yeah, they call it 130 million. And then apply the same multiples. You know, you're talking about a very big, very big expansion, and it's, of course, you know, it's you're going to need partners like Artery, because that mine's not going to cost $10 million. That mine's going to cost a lot more than $1 million than that, and that's why you need big partners, strong partners, reliable partners, and people to share your aspirations and ambitions. That's one of the reasons. Well, it's the reason. We're with Artery. They recognize the potential. They share our ambitions. And of course, we will give them a new partner, Artery. We will give them huge confidence when we'll give the market, like we'll give the Rose team for that matter, give them huge confidence when we turn our ambitions into actual numbers, which we can release on a regular basis as companies who are producing do. That's when the confidence level will arise. Then when we start going out drilling, tell the market and prove to the market there's much of the same, then when we get the much of the same to 500,000 tons, then we'll get the attention I think the company deserves. And the valuation will result from that attention. So upwards and upwards with Bazant, there's no doubt about it. And we crossed a major hurdle, I think, with the announcement of you know, the funding. It wasn't just about the money. You know, I read now 7 million, a lot of who are about 7 million. But in actual fact, one should read is a really big company who's in the copper space, well-positioned, have decided to partner and take off our copper and take financial risk with us.
Yeah, I just want to interrupt because there's a couple of points I want to make. The first is that they signed up with Mercuria, part of the Project Vault, the $10 billion strategic minerals initiative in the US. So they're on that program. But the other thing is, I mean, there's various deals. You can, you know, it's quite easy to look up. Like the Nisse project in Norway, they helped the $140 million project finance package. But I can't see anywhere where they've done a small scale deal, you know, for $7, $10, $20 million. That is this the first kind of small scale deal that they've done?
It's. I couldn't say that as an absolute, Charles, but it's certainly.
I can't find any others.
Yeah, well, I can't either. We're certainly at the bottom of the scale, and quite frankly, that was a point I've had to put to our shareholders, and was something which they told us directly. I don't want to share, you know, conversations with our funders, but they made it very clear to us by action that, irrespective of deal size, they have a protocol, they have a way of working, they have a way of due diligence. And they don't change it for deal size. And so the shareholders who have been complaining that, there is no financing, there can't be financing, it can't be taking this long. Artery are a big company with big standards, big protocols, proper due diligence. And when I say proper, boy, do I mean proper. Really, you know, do a project to bits before they actually invest on it, and it's not related to size. So the fact that they chose to put that much effort into a smallish investment, and probably, as you say, their smallest investment, is very encouraging to management, that it shows a good level of support. But what you just said and outlined some of the projects, if they want to go big, they can go big. Would they do that with us? Why would they do it with us? Why would they do it with us? It's for us to prove to them we're good at what we're doing, and we can meet all of our statements that we made to them back in September, October, when we were negotiating. That's what Artie will be waiting for now. Okay, Colin, show us, and I think they'll share the journey with us if we show them.
Well, I think for me,
When we show them, I don't like the word if even appearing in the conversation. When we show them.
I think last thing from me before I hand off again, is the key thing is, we're looking for production in Q3, and then scaling up, and you're looking at first sales presumably in Q3, and at the gate maybe early Q4. When you're massively scaling up or getting to where you want to be, with Hope and Gaurav in the next few years, you have a partner with the expertise, but also the pockets to scale with you, and assuming they're happy with the product, obviously, this is a trading business. They've got the money, and also fair terms to help build it from obviously big for for small caps, something that could become much larger. Having that kind of ready-made partner and potentially a board member there is going to make life a lot easier for you in terms of growth ambition versus a lot of smaller scale mines. It's just, here's the money, here's a term sheet, and that's a very different proposition, right?
Yeah, well, don't you find it very interesting, Charles, that they've introduced the concept of a convertible if they so wish. I think that pleased me no end, the fact that they are actually prepared to take shares in the company. And that's not the trader style, you know. That's not the trader style, as you say, here's the money, give us the copper, and what a healthy return on it. That's not the attitude. They're considering, in the way they've structured this deal, provided we perform. We deliver as we say we can deliver. They're actually looking at partnership, taking shares, and as you say, asking for a seat on the board, and so they can really be part of what we're doing, what we're up to, and where we're going. Some people look at a seat on the board as a threat. It's not a threat. It's a tremendous opportunity to have someone on your board who comes from a major institution like Artery, and we look forward to that day we make the appointment. So there's a lot behind that simple statement, the right to appoint a board member. And you've summed it up again, as you always do, that it's the total package, isn't it, Charles?
I think for me, it's trying to think of the words. It's not just about the money. It's about the corporate validation. I mean, to be honest, for $7 million, the reasonable chance you could have gone out to London, gotten some dilution, and raised that money yourself. But Hartree lending it to you at a deal of this size, right at the very bottom, is a sign of quality due diligence that we basically can't conduct ourselves from a desk in London, and that's hugely encouraging. So good luck to you, Colin.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, there are those who said you could have had a whip round and got that money, and you're absolutely right. You know, in fact, your words are my words. There's money in money, and Artery money, of course, is quality money, which will hopefully be followed, assuming that we deliver on everything we've said we'll deliver in round one. So couldn't agree with you more. To agree with you more. It was worth waiting for the due diligence to be completed, going through all the protocols, making all the securities one has to make, because it's not a one-off. Byzant is the start of a journey. Phase one is the start of a journey. It's not as though we're going to go around looking for ore. There's 69,000 meters been drilled. It's verification. We're going to be fill the gap between 150 meters and surface. And produce one hell of an open pit there, because that's the way it's shaping up. So, it wasn't just a one-off, grab some money to get into production. It was part of a grand scheme. And that grand scheme will take 5 years to execute. But just watch out for open grow up, open Gorup growing in a very, very grand style to be a much bigger proposition for all concerned. And who's going to be the ultimate beneficiary? Ourselves and our shareholders.
Indeed.
And
And
we've
on
been
that
very.
bombshell, Colin, it's been lovely to chat to you, sir, and we will speak again soon.
Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. I always enjoy being on these podcasts, and I hope you have a nice Sunday roast. And thank you very much indeed for giving me the opportunity. Would have been nice to see you there, but I understand Kevin is misplaced, Phil's elsewhere, and Charles, it just wasn't convenient. But you were missed, and probably we'll do the same again. I think it won't be 2 years, hopefully. It'll be sooner than that. So thanks very much again, gents. So all the very
Yeah,
best. Thank you.
all the best,
Cheers, Colin.
Kevin.
Cheers.
Cheers, Colin.
So we're now welcoming our second guest today on the Sunday Roast, Paul Elliott from Active Energy. Well, Paul, how's things going in the active energy world? Obviously, we've got Dubai. We had some movement on Bahrain, by the sounds of things, as well. And we've also got Saudi Arabia in the background there in terms of stuff going on. Just so people understand to position it, what we're really talking about is active energy being almost like a utility play that is effectively providing electricity for AI centers and the like. So over to you, Paul. Tell us what's been happening.
Well, it has been a busy few months. Needless to say, you've seen the RNSs. We've pretty much got everything there. Everything is in place for this to go. We've got, obviously, a now signed agreement with the Royal Office. They have got a pipeline of 50 to 100 megawatts for us to utilize. We've got Bitdeer, who obviously are, what, $3.5 billion NASDAQ listed, one of the biggest providers of machines. Where are they pivoting to? They're now going straight into AI. They're trying to get a footprint together, which they did with their raise in February. We've also got two other possible partners trying to do the same with us as what Bitdeer are. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's moved on a lot. We've got, as you mentioned before, Bahrain. I went to meet the head of their economic development team on Monday, which went very well. He's looking at trying to come up with a proposal for us to go over there. Saudi, that's still there brewing away in the background as well. And yeah, the most important thing for me is we've now proven concept. We've got our first site up and running. It's producing income and it's going to grow steadily from that. So yeah, we've got it there, which brings us on to the fact that, you know, because we've got that concept in place and it's proven now, it's revenue generating. Hopefully people can see now what we're doing and what we're able to roll out.
Just start with, you know, kind of blue sky potential. Paint me a picture of where you want to be a year from now.
Well, it's always the same. I mean, we want to be up to 100 megawatts within a year. Yeah, obviously, it's all down to growth and how you can get there. As I said just now, Charles, you know, we've got everything in place. We've got the partners there. We've got the land. We've got the power play. Everything's in place.
And I think it's about, you know, it's also about debt instruments, right? Because presumably once you're generating significant income, the kind of debt finance that will be available, it's going to be different to what you can get now.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's very interesting that you mentioned that. You know, what we're looking at the moment, which, you know, we're currently in talks with, is self-funding debt facilities. That's the way forward. As I said, it's there, it's generating. So, you know, we should be able to do, you know, simple debt facilities now based on a growth pattern, buying more megawattage in and having that funded by a debt facility on a repayment basis. Yeah,
that's the plan. I guess it kind of like an elevator pitch kind of way. What would you say is the economic moat for the company? So, you know, there's hundreds of juniors on AIM all doing various different things. What specifically about this one is you know, the reason to buy it and hold it through the volatility?
I think for us, as I said, I mean, you know, you've always got that risk there, but for us now, we've proven we've got revenue coming in. We've got, you know, a cash forecast going forward on what we've got under our belt already before we've even purchased any more assets. So, you know, we are ahead of the game, I believe, in that respect. And return-wise as well, you know, we're looking at great returns on these. And, you know, as soon as people see what we've got and our heads above the parapet, you know, I think the sky's the limit. I really do.
Yeah. Well, you've got that initial operational footprint within the UAE. But I noticed actually a few days ago the engagement with Bahrain's Economic Development Board, which is a pretty significant step. What kind of conversations are you having with them at the moment that you can disclose?
Okay, so if we go back to, I think it was in January when they first reached out to me, I wasn't knocking on their door.
They were knocking on yours.
Yeah. Everyone said, why haven't you looked at Bahrain? And I said, well, I can only do one thing at a time, you know, and we're already committed, we're doing that there. And they went a little bit quiet, obviously, as soon as war broke out. And then literally 3 weeks ago again, they said, you know, because I kept in contact with them, just the odd emails and stuff. And then I said, right, we're here. Come on, let's get this going. We want to get moving. We want to move forward. How can we do it? So after that meeting, they're flying back to Bahrain this weekend. and they're going to try to come up with some proposals for us to be able to work forward along the same basis of what we've got. They know our play. They know what we need to do it, which is obviously land, power, and they've got abundance of both.
See, I think it's interesting because that first full month of training at Gumer, you know, again, I mean, the RNS was only at the start of this month, so you know, we have the SpaceX IPO today, actually. You kind of, it's kind of taken everything over. I do wonder whether, you know, what, now that that training event is over, a lot of liquidity is going to start flooding back to the small caps where it didn't before, and these RNSs, you know, have come out and weren't particularly appreciated. Now will, and that, you know, that first full month of trading was 400,000 AED or just
yeah
over?
So it's yeah. about $114,000. That was obviously at the first one, and again, if you recall, we moved the customers over that we had pre-booked on our Liwa site on the first on our 8 megawatt site,
yeah,
moved them onto it, you know, and it just, again, it just shows how you can easily transition from one site to another. You know, everything's really simple to move, customers are easy to move over. We've produced 97% uptime in that first month. We've got some teething problems to sort out just to get the revenue up, which we've been working on over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's only going to get better from there, yeah.
Yeah, and then last one from me before I hand back off to Kevin, because I'm going to shoot off. But I'm trying to think of the words. Obviously, you've got the pressure of the Strait of Hormuz, the Iran war going on. I mean, many analysts think that that's a temporary solution that's going to end relatively soon. I include myself in that. That's going to be a big tailwind for you, surely, when those hostilities cease or not.
Well, the funny thing is, it gave us great opportunities when the war broke out and people were just not sure what they wanted to do. So we managed to pick up a couple of really cheap sites. We've got, you know, a great pipeline there. And in all fairness, again, if you go on about, you know, where do we want to be? We're currently being pushed at the moment by the Royal Office to, you know, start rolling out and get these sites going with them, because they see the potential there, you know, and they've opened some other doors with regards to the debt facility again out there from different families, and the same through the UK. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be big. I really do think so.
And then, sorry, I thought I had, I've got, and the last question, one
more. Oh, and the last question.
There is just one more.
It's not about my roast or anything like that.
No. I was just trying to. I quite like companies where management have skin in the game, right? And are going to lose out if it doesn't go well. I can't. I'm trying to find the up to date numbers, but I can't. What percentage of a company do you own personally now?
I think on record I've got 15%.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. But don't forget as well, I've still got a convertible loan note that I put in at the start. I mean, personally, cash in to get where we are. And obviously getting the shell off the ground to start with before what you've seen. I'm in for this for probably 700,000-800,000 of my money at the moment. But again, it's just to show my confidence again, just before we needed some a little bit of funds in just before we were moving forward. I think it was back in April. And I could have put some money in, which I did, about £110,000 of my own cash in. And I could have done that under my original CLN. Which is a lower discounted rate, but I didn't. I chose to do it at market price just to show my confidence in this.
Beautiful, Paul. Thank you very much. Kev, over to you.
Yeah, Paul, when that CLN comes in, you're going to be, what, 25%, maybe even a bit higher?
Yeah.
So the question that I've got in my head, just so people have the perspective, if in 12 months' time, and it is a forward-looking statement, if you have 100 megawatts, and let's assume it's all in the UAE, because the reality is that you're probably not going to be in Bahrain in a hurry or Saudi, but they're coming. But 100 megawatts in the UAE, what revenue are you likely to have from them? And also, what percentage margin are you hoping to have on those things?
So we've got the two models. You've got the pure hosting that we're doing, which is round about between, you know, let's just go, and don't you know, hold me to these. I'm just throwing figures at you. Between $300,000 and $400,000 per megawatt per year. But then what we're doing with Bitdeer is the joint venture basis on the mined Bitcoin.
So sorry, let me stop you there. Is that $300,000 to $400,000 effectively free cash flow? We're not going to say profit, but free cash flow on each megawatt?
Yes.
Or is that the revenue?
That's the revenue.
Okay.
From that, you're looking at round about $180,000 to $220,000 per megawatt per year.
Of free cash flow.
Yes. But then add on top of that, with what we're doing with Bitdeer, we also then get a share of the mined coin, which will equate to probably, and even though, because we're still going the pessimistic price of $60,000 to $65,000 per Bitcoin, you're looking at another, for us, it would be 3 to 4 Bitcoins per megawatt per year. So you've then got another $180,000, even at only $60,000 of a Bitcoin per annum per megawatt. But don't forget, so that's going to be on the new sites that we're rolling out, such as our first 8 megawatt one. That's the flagship one that we're doing with those guys involved. That's really sort of pushing on as well. We're looking at, we've tailored that now for their use. Obviously, we're just working behind the scenes on the contract and the how it's all going to pan out over the years. But they're really keen. They're really pushing us. We've got the Royal Office pushing us to do this. It's all there. It's ready to go.
Yeah. So on 100 megawatts, at the bottom end of what you're talking about $18 million per annum free cash flow plus the Bitcoin profit.
Yep. So again, let's just say you did only 50 megawatts of, I mean, you know, let's just be pessimistic. Only 50 megawatts on a Bitcoin split. So you've got another, say, $180,000 times it by 50 megawatts. So you've got another 9 million in mined Bitcoin at $60,000 a coin, because it's not all going to be.
Yeah, 100,000 or 100 megawatts is not all going to be Bitcoin.
No.
But I mean, the 18,000 is without the Bitcoin. Oh, sorry, the 18 million is without the Bitcoin. Then we've got 9 million with Bitcoin. So in total, you're in the region of 27. Let's again be pessimistic and say $20 million, which is knocking sort of 20% or more off it. $20 million, free cash flow. Boy, you're going to have a snowball rolling down the hill to get to 200, 300, 400 megawatts very quickly, exactly. You would imagine.
And don't forget, there's our pipeline there for doing that type of deal, because we've got Bahrain and we've got Saudi on the hook already.
Yeah,
it's not just it's not a one-country solution. You know, it's going to be rolled out across the whole of the Middle East, we hope. That's what we'd like to do.
I don't know whether you listened to the roast last week, but I did a thing on 10 companies I think are going to 10 bag. And my first three were Extract, Active Energy, and Aterion. So yeah. I believe just purely on revenue, that for me, unless you completely drop the ball, I don't see how you're not going to effectively 10 bag. Because on a 20 million as a utility play, you're talking about at least 10 times as a PE. That's 200 million as a market cap. Let's say 150 million pounds, which is way more than 10 times what you are at the moment.
Yeah, exactly, Kevin.
Okay, enjoy your day. And let's meet up again when the next news comes around. And good luck.
Definitely. Okay, thanks, Kevin. Take care, buddy.
Let's move on to the movers and shakers of the week. The best performer is up some 104%. It's RC365 Holding. They announced the soft launch of RC3.0, the latest version of its fintech platform, ahead of a targeted commercial launch in June 2026. EO Wolf Mining, Kev, I don't know if you know the 4%, they secured a non-binding terms of a $3.5 million strategic investment from Backers Capital as part of a proposed $4 million financing package. The good news for them, obviously. And then Unicorn up some 45%. That Unicorn Mineral actually provided an update on the proposed acquisition of a controlling stake in the Klein Elbe copper mine and associated 5.6 million tons tailings project in Namibia. So that one looking good. There was some news on Friday morning as well of African Pioneer. Do you want to just talk us through that news, Kev? We saw that very good news for African Pioneer.
Yeah, I think I haven't digested the RNS properly yet, but obviously we've just talked to Colin about it in more detail now. But it looks like 26% free carry on the whole thing. So what are we talking about? No more dilution, or very minor, if at all, in African Pioneer from this point on. And 26% of a project that is bigger than Bazant Hope and Gorup. 300,000 tons of contained copper, and it looks like, yeah, it's a fantastic deal, really, to be honest. They're going to be able to buy 10% of the company, so I suppose that's the dilution that we would have. Yeah, let's see at the end of the program what the share price is in African Pioneer today, because we're recording this and the market hasn't actually quite opened.
Yeah. So it's Xinhai Mining Services. And obviously, as you say, that they would subscribe for about 10% equity in AFP at 1.15 pence per share and provide the project financing that could ultimately be repaid through an interest in the project vehicle. So management views the deal as a transformational step towards creating a new copper producer in Namibia, with the project benefiting from its strategic location just 30 kilometers from Windhoek and access to established infrastructure. Yeah, very, very good news, that one. And obviously, we also saw the biggest shaker of the week was Silver Bullet, SBDS, down some 60% after they announced that they would be effectively seek shareholder approval for the proposed cancellation of the company's ordinary shares. So it looks like a delisting from the AIM market on that one, unfortunately. World Cup underway, Kev. Obviously, Mexico made a winning start to the 2026 World Cup with a 2-0 victory over South Africa in a dramatic opening match at the packed Azteca Stadium. Julian Quinones gave the host an early lead before veteran striker Raul Jimenez headed home his first ever World Cup goal to seal the win. And then obviously, I don't know if you saw the other result, South Korea coming from behind to beat Czech Republic 2-1 in their opening World Cup.
There's a small cinema on the campus here, and there is about 150 to 200 South Korean people here.
Brilliant.
So I was in this cinema packed to the rafters with South Koreans watching it, and the atmosphere was amazing, actually. They wouldn't shut up through the whole match. And then when they went 1-0 down, it was like, oh, no. And then obviously they scored the equalizer and then they scored the winner. So, yeah, it was great.
That's brilliant. That would be amazing.
Good memory for the World Cup.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. So, yeah.
And we don't start, or England don't start until Wednesday, I think it is.
Yeah, Wednesday the 18th against Croatia, isn't it?
And Scotland, I'm not sure, when do they start?
Yeah, so Scotland play on Sunday the 14th against Haiti at 2 a.m. in the morning. So very early start for the fans on that one.
Yeah, 2 a.m. in the morning in the UK is going to be, yeah, it's going to be three o'clock in the afternoon here. So yeah, we're not too bad with the times actually. Early morning.
I think I was reading an article about the World Cup, and there's like obviously there's a lot more teams in this. I think it was 36 in the last one. I think it's 48 from memory in this World Cup.
Yeah,
which is a lot of teams, but I think it's the first World Cup where two countries that are warring, i.e. the US and Iran, are actually currently at war during the World Cup and actually playing together.
Yeah, crazy.
She's absolutely crazy.
And just as we say that, the market's open and African Pioneers 165, up another 25%. So,
excellent.
Yeah. So yeah, looking good.
Looking good. Okay. Well, anything else you want to mention, Kev, for this week?
I saw Extract move up as well this week. That's done good. Sovereign Metals seems to have hit a bit of a bottom and then come back out of it. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about this whole week has been liquidity, hasn't it? I mean, basically, it's been like a suction of liquidity being taken out of the market. Obviously, we're recording this before the open for SpaceX.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen there? It could literally rocket, pun intended, and it could also be blown out the sky, I think. But I think it's more likely that it's going to go up because of the way it's been, and I say this word lightly, manipulated, but I think it has been manipulated.
I mean, they're saying at the moment that it's set to value Musk's company around $1.75 trillion, making it one of the largest stock market listings ever. And investors are effectively being asked to place a valuation not just on a rocket launch, but on the future growth of the Starlink's global satellite network. Obviously, you've got the artificial intelligence through the XAI and SpaceX's long-term ambitions in space infrastructure. I guess the key debate is whether it represents the next, you know, great technology investment opportunity or some sort of crazy valuation that has become detached from, as we've talked about on the show before, you know, the fundamentals. We know the IPO is likely to serve as a test of investor appetite. We potentially are going to see many, many more. You know, with this talk of Anthropic doing an IPO coming up, and also OpenAI are also looking to, they've done a filing as well. So I think there's going to be some really big, major IPOs happening this year. And as you say, maybe that'll act as a bit of a liquidity, so sucking a lot of liquidity out of the market. But yeah,
maybe a test of sanity rather than anything else.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, well, if you like what you heard, please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for further notifications of future episodes, and have a great weekend all. We'll be back next week.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.